this should be interesting because this, I have sort of a, we saw a case study for southwestern U.S., and I have here sort of a case study of what's happening in the Northeast, including a new program we have on climate smart farming. I want to first mention here that Allison Chatterchon, who's the second author here, really very much could have been attributed the first authorship. She's the director of our climate smart farming program. I've been involved with agriculture and climate change since the 1990s there as a faculty member, and Art DeGaetano is a climate scientist that I collaborate with quite a bit, but we put together this new entity, our Climate Institute, and Allison's the director of it and has been doing a great job, and much of the work I'm presenting is really her baby in many ways. Well, first, wanted to point out some of the main challenges we have in the Northeast, and unlike some other parts of the country, such as Arizona, for example, when it comes to water, there's opportunities as well as challenges, and I'll talk about those. So the challenges are, I guess, not that much different than many parts of the world. We still, although we're not having the kind of high temperature stress you might see in some other areas, our farmers will be facing high temperature stress like they've never seen before. A huge dairy production system in the Northeast. We're usually in the top five in the U.S., that region, in terms of dairy. New York, in particular, is usually number one or two in yogurt production, for example. Much of our crop production is corn, grain, silage, alfalfa, hay, other food feedstocks for the dairy industry, rain-fed. We have both too much and too little water for crops. So our farmers are facing flooding events like they've never seen before, an increased frequency of them. And they're seeing the threat of drought looming in the future as our temperatures go up and predictions of our rainfall not going up enough to keep up with future water demand. One thing we're seeing very dramatically in the Northeast that may not be the case so much in the southwestern U.S. is in places like the northeastern U.S. where we've been fortunate, you might say, because of our severe winters, to have a lot of winter kill-off of crop, insect disease, and weed pests. And lots of those kinds of pests of agriculture can't overwinter in our area. With the warmer winters we're seeing, there's been a widespread, across the northern hemisphere actually, we're seeing this, of course, a movement, the habitable zone of a lot of pests to agriculture moving northward. And so far, farmers are seeing, we've always had disease and weed problems. They're going to see problems that are worse than they ever were before, and they're already seeing this. And then climate change is, of course, much more complicated than warming. And I talk to audiences really around the world. I do work in East Africa as well as other parts of the world. And everywhere farmers tell me about climate change, if it was just, you know, getting a little warmer every year, getting a little hotter, or getting a little drier every year, we could adapt to that. But that's not what we're seeing, particularly in the Northeast. Farmers are seeing extreme events that nobody, their parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, don't recall seeing, and sometimes two extremes going the opposite way in the same year, the wettest spring they've ever seen and then the driest August. Terrible freeze damage in the winter followed by the hottest summer heat stress they've ever seen. So it makes it complicated to deal with, and I'll talk a little bit more about that shortly. Finally, the opportunities, so kind of counteracting. Yes, we're seeing our farmers are going to be dealing with summer heat stress, but nothing like the heat stress challenges in places like the southwestern U.S. or tropical regions around the world where it's already too hot. There's actually a silver lining, of course, to warming in a place like the Northeast, longer growing seasons, et cetera, like I'll mention. Relative to other regions, we have water. We have the Finger Lakes. We have the Great Lakes. We have huge reservoirs of water. That's on the positive side of water. On the negative side of water, farmers don't have access to most of that big, those big, deep reservoirs of water. There's not an infrastructure, there's not canals coming out of the Finger Lakes to feed into farming operations. The infrastructure to support in really dry years, farmers does not exist. Most of them throw a tube into a creek going through their farm with a pump to do the supplemental irrigation they need to do, that kind of thing, or a small pond on their farm, or some small wells to supplemental irrigation. But there's not really the infrastructure. The other thing is, on the positive side, you might say farmers do not have to report their water use. Farmers can go from wells, city use, no reporting. There's requests for, it's kind of voluntary if you're using more than, I think, 150,000 gallons per day, something like that. No laws about it. On the other hand, farmers have no established water rights. I grew up at UC Davis, in terms of my graduate work many years ago, and every farmer knows his water rights. Farmers in the Northeast have never even had to think about it. Longer frost-free period, fantastic news. When I tell farmers about that, their eyes light up. Things that could grow they couldn't grow before. Longer growing season varieties tend to have higher yield potential, double cropping, et cetera, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. Another opportunity we have is, of course, in the Northeast. We've got, you know, the whole Northeast urban area is a huge market for food crops. So in the Northeast, part of our case study is we have opportunities as well as challenges, and Cornell and those of us involved in the Northeast Climate Hub are also, you know, we're all about finding those opportunities for our farmers, taking advantage of climate change, as well as dealing with the new challenges they'll have. This is a story for this from the last National Climate Assessment report, and this is showing increases in frost-free period, the frost-free season length across the U.S. and the Northeast, like many other parts of the Northern Hemisphere. This is just historical data. This isn't even looking at the climate change projections, which for the Northeast say this trend will continue. Fantastic. Longer growing seasons. We recognized this a decade ago or so. We started really talking to farmers about this. And some of our corn farmers, for example, are growing longer growing season, experimenting with longer growing season varieties. And what they're telling us is they're getting burned in many years. What they're finding out is they might have the longest frost-free period they've ever seen in the record-breaking frost-free period, but also the wettest spring. A couple years ago, farmers who had invested a lot in seed for new longer growing season varieties got burned because they couldn't get into plant until late June. The fields were so wet. So frost-free period is not the same as growing season length. We're learning. So this is why I say climate change is complicated. We're seeing a significant increase in the frequency of heavy rainfall events. This is showing across the U.S. the frequency of this is not showing increases in all total annual rainfall or whatever, but the increase in the frequency of days where you have extreme rainfall events. And so in the case of the Northeast, what it refers to is greater than 2 inches in 48 hours. And we're kind of the winner here in the U.S., a 71% increase in the number of days per year since the 1950s in this sort of thing. So when we talk to farmers about water and climate change, the first thing they talk about is flooding and not drought. This is showing, this is a bar graph going back all the way to the 1870s, historical records for New York, looking at extreme heat stress, in this case, number of days greater than 90 Fahrenheit, extreme number of days greater than 2 inches of rain. And you can see just in the last, each one of these bars represents the average of a full 10-year period. So in the last decade, you can see both in terms of heat stress and heavy rains. Climate change has really kind of come home to roost. Whether this is a bit of an aberration, it's quite a quick jump, but of course it is corroborated by the general climate change trends we're seeing across the Northern Hemisphere. But farmers are feeling this. Farmers recognize that something's happening with heat stress and heavy rains in our area, so very, very concerned about that. In terms of drought, I wanted to say you might think the Northeast doesn't have to worry about this at all, but that's not really the case. This shows that the blue line going across the screen is looking for all months of the year, the full year. And, of course, in the 6, 7, 8 refers to the summer times, June, July, August. But you can see year-round, if you include snowfall in the winter, converting that to inches of rain, inches of liquid water, we're a very unusual area in that we have almost the same amount of water per month throughout the year. The red represents the potential evapotranspiration, based on meteorological data. And you can see that in the summer months, this is just based on historical data for the western part of New York, we don't quite meet our water needs. And to some extent, farmers on deep soils, their soil water holding capacity, particularly if they've got good soil health, good organic matter, might buffer them from those summer water deficits. But in general, farmers who are growing high-value fruit and vegetable crops know that they need some supplemental irrigation to make up those deficits. And now what's going to happen with climate change is we have the data kind of shows, and I'll show you a graphic next showing the projections for the future, very little modest changes in our rainfall pattern, but of course increases in potential evapotranspiration leading to increased risk of drought. So the red line's likely to go up, the blue line not much, increasing our need for summer rainfall. So on the left here, you see the projections for the future. This is actually for the southern part of the Northeast. And there's a different, the models, of course, deviate. There's big error bars around it, but you can see a very clear trend, as we see across the globe, of course, increased temperatures, which will, of course, translate directly into potential evapotranspiration, demand, crop water demands, increasing plus longer growing seasons. Rainfall, no change. And actually, when we break the rainfall into seasonal change, we see more rain coming in the winter and less in the summer. So we foresee future summer drought risk for the region being worse than it has been before, but nothing like what they're facing in Arizona, of course. In 2016, I'm currently now working on a paper on Northeast agriculture and climate change, and wasn't planning on saying a whole lot about drought because, as I mentioned, flooding is the thing we're seeing more about. Then in 2000, this past summer, we've seen a drought that has broken all records, at least in the western part of New York. This is a series of graphics of the U.S. Drought Monitor. The bottom right map of New York, that red area, so that's the story in September showing western New York in a very severe extreme drought where we had record-breaking reductions in stream flows, and I say many farmers get their water from the streams. So it's not unusual for in New York to see a period of 2 or 3 weeks during the summer where the rainfall doesn't quite match what the crop water needs. Farmers need to get out with their limited irrigation capacity. Those are growing high-value crops, and do some spot irrigation. But this lasted the whole summer, and we've done a survey looking at the impacts of this, and pretty devastating in terms of percent loss to our rain-fed crops. This is kind of breaking the on the upper left. You're looking at rain-fed field crop losses. As I say, much of this is food for the dairy industry. Of the percent of respondents, we had about 250 farmer respondents to this survey. The average losses in the rain-fed area were around 50%. Same thing with pasture. With fruit and vegetable crops, some of those are irrigated, some of those are not. Needless to say, those are farmers who had irrigation had smaller percent losses than those who did not. But even those farmers, if you look at the vegetable crops, for example, even those farmers that irrigated, many of them are reporting 30 to 50% losses. And that's because, yes, they say they irrigate those lands, but they don't have enough irrigation equipment to keep up with the summer-long drought like we had this year. They might have 100 acres of vegetables, and they can do 3 or 4 acres at a time. And you can see you just can't keep up. So that's our challenge with future water. So for the Northeast, we have all these challenges with heat stress, summer drought, heavy rains, all projected to increase for the Northeast. We have those advantages, the slight silver lining, some opportunities there, but we also have these things to deal with. And then, again, you know, climate change isn't just about warming. The grower group that calls me out the most in the Northeast to talk about climate change is the fruit crop growers to talk about frost and winter freeze damage. Anecdotally, whether it's part of climate change or not, we don't know, but we've certainly seen more years where, because of really variable winter temperatures, more frost damage. This can kind of come, this is showing 2012. New York State is usually number two or three in the country in apple production, millions of dollars. 2012, half the industry was lost, many millions of dollars lost, because the apples bloomed a record-breaking 4 weeks earlier than normal, and then we got hit with the frost. And grape growers have been hit on the other end, where we have warm December, so the plants don't harden properly going into winter. Then we get into our, quote, normal January temperatures, which can go down to minus 10 degrees Fahrenheit, that kind of thing, and can have major damage to buds and vine crops. So it's the variability of winter temperatures. And my own group is doing some modeling work with apple bloom date modeling combined with climate change projections, trying to figure out whether this is part and parcel of climate change. I'm not showing the data right here today, but our conclusions are that by the end of the century, we're going to kind of grow through this due to the warming. But in the meantime, we could have more increased incidence of frost and freeze damage due to variable winters. Another thing, as I mentioned already, one thing we're seeing in these higher latitude areas like the northeastern U.S. is with the longer frost free period, while that has a silver lining in terms of crops you might grow, thinking along those lines, it's also good news for some of our worst pests for farmers. Kudzu, a famous invasive aggressive weed, historically has been confined to the south of us. It's now showing up, as we predicted some years ago with some modeling work, in New York. The flea beetle is a vector of Stewart's wilt off corn in the Northeast. Flea beetles used to pretty much die off in the winter, so its spring populations are very low. Now it doesn't. Corn earworm is another disease, Lepidopteran pest of corn that we're seeing in the Northeast we haven't seen much of before. So farmers, when we talk to them about this, some of that issue of communication that was mentioned earlier, wanted to say a couple of things about that. If I was to talk to a group of farmers and a big room of farmers, and if I were to say, who wants to talk about climate change? Maybe only a few would put their hands, some might walk out of the room, it's been so politicized. If I wanted to say, who wants to talk about the crummy weather, everybody's concerned about that. So one way, when we talk to our extension staff about not being reticent to talk to farmers about climate change, we point out the places of engagement, and one is every farmer is quite willing to talk about the weather, extreme weathers, and they're all concerned about those things. But one thing they have confusion about, just like even the climate scientists do as well, is which of the extreme weather events we're seeing are something that's really part and parcel of a long-term trend, a climate change trend I need to invest in to adapt to, and which is just, quote, normal variability. And this is where a place like Cornell and our Climate Smart Farming program is trying to help farmers discern which of the extreme events they're witnessing we have high certainty is probably something that is going to be a long-term trend, which is not. But farmers are facing situations in our area. Should we invest in irrigation system, drainage, or both? And we're working with them on trying to provide information for that. So this comes into now, that's kind of the background of, what the needs are in the Northeast. And so our Climate Smart Farming this new institute we've formed, and the extension team is all about helping farmers start dealing with this. And we've begun with really focusing on farm decisions that are really not focused in really long-term climate change, but really improved short-term weather forecasting, short-term real-time weather data information to help them deal with what they perceive and what we feel is true and correctly happening, that weather extremes are becoming less predictable. So helping them be better prepared by days, weeks, maybe months in some cases for what might be ahead. And so we have a series of things that they can go to, and I'll go through a few of those in my slides here. First of all, kind of our overall goal, just improving, maintaining farm incomes and food security. Also very interested in increasing the energy efficiency and renewable energy capacity to reduce operating costs and greenhouse gas emissions on farms, and increase farmer resiliency to extreme weather. Those are our main goals. On the second bullet, I did want to mention, too, I'm kind of focusing mostly on adaptation today, that is farmers coping with some of the new challenges, taking advantage of some possible new opportunities. But what about the mitigation and what farmers can do about climate change? And there, we feel like the place of engagement with farmers is really talking about energy efficiency, the bottom line. Farmers are, just like any homeowner, very interested in improving the energy efficiency of their farms. I mean, decades ago, farmers went to diesel engines because they were more energy efficient. So we remind them of that and begin working that. And we don't have, all of our farmers are very interested in renewable energy opportunities. So we begin there and then point out that that's focused on fossil fuel use and CO2 and their bottom line. There's also some other greenhouse gases that come from farms, such as nitrous oxide and methane, and move into that part of the story in terms of our educational materials we have for farmers there. This is kind of a small print to basically just kind of our, the organization of what we're doing at Cornell. We have a lot of strength in various aspects of research from a fantastic group of climate scientists to agronomists, soil scientists, communication specialists, which work with us a lot on this politicized issue. We still have a strong extension team, and I'll talk to you a moment about our Climate Smart Farming extension team of specialists. Then working a lot with a lot of feedback. Before we went out to the farmers, we actually got a lot of information from the farmers, including doing some surveys about their attitudes about climate change, et cetera. We have a farmer advisory panel, and this is why our decision support tools are beginning with real-time weather and unpredictable weather, part of the story with that. So a lot of, it's not kind of a top-down thing where we're marching out to the farmers to tell them what to do. We're trying to provide them with information to make better decisions, and those the kind of information they want is coming from them. This is our extension team. Some of these people are PhD level, master's level people from our cooperative extension system in the county, in the various counties. They come from different sorts of orientation. But what we've done with these, a small subset of our extension people, we do still have extension people in most every agricultural county in New York. But these people have gotten special training so they actually feel comfortable themselves talking to farmers about climate change and don't have to always call myself or Art DeGaetano or Allison out to come give talks to their farmers. And they're integrating this information we're developing into other programs, such as programs on pest management, programs on water management, et cetera, slowly bringing it forward to the forefront for the farmers. This is just showing some of the resources we provide. We have a lot of fact sheets and links to all kinds of other sites. Someone mentioned SARE before. We link to SARE, USDA sites, et cetera, for them to get information. We've done a thing that's been very successful is we just worked with some undergrad interns as well as some of our communication people and developed some really short 3 to 4 minute videos of farmers of various commodity groups talking about weather, what they want to call it, weather. Some of them don't mention the phrase climate change in their entire video, but they're talking about weather extremes or climate change on their farm and what they're doing about it. Each one's kind of got their own story, their own interesting twist on it. But it really makes our extension people seeing those, makes them more comfortable talking about it. And, of course, there's nothing like the peer-to-peer, farmer-to-farmer talking about how they're dealing with climate change. These are some of the other tools we have: frost risk, growing degree day, irrigation scheduler. Our growing degree tool is pretty much the backbone of our frost risk tool. Since I'm running out of time, I won't go into a lot of detail about it, but it's something most of you would know. Is the kind of the mechanics of doing this sort of thing are fairly straightforward. Our frost risk tool, which is giving farmers more of a heads up than they've had before on what frost risk or midwinter freeze damage might be for grapes or frost risk for apples. I'll skip that one. Our water deficit calculator. So this is just shows what happened this last year. You can see how much of a deficit we had this past summer in terms of our water. We also have an irrigation scheduling tool, but just for our rain-fed crop growers, they're just interested in seeing how bad a drought is my crop feeling and what's the projection for it changing. We're also including in this some longer 30-day forecasts to give farmers an idea of how long droughts might last. Same thing with our irrigation scheduling tool. It's like the type of irrigation scheduling based on potential evapotranspiration, rainfall, et cetera, so water holding capacity that many of you would be familiar with, but also includes historical data to provide as much as a 30-day forecast. I'll skip that one. Here's what I want to talk about, our next steps. Expanding our extension and farmer tools. Building out the website functionality, resources, and regional integration. And then in the next year to 2 years, we're planning on building some new tools that really truly are more focused on longer-term climate change issues. So using climate, farmer will be able to show pick from a map where they live, look at a few different climate change scenarios in terms of future drought risks, and the cost benefits of doing something versus doing nothing in terms of adapting to water challenges of the future. So they can choose to do nothing and see what that might mean in terms of the climate forecast, in terms of drought risk and flooding risk. They can decide to invest a certain amount of money today or next year or 2 years from now in an irrigation system or a drainage system or both and see how that plays out. Heat stress and cost benefits of improving barn cooling capacity, and then looking at variety selection, site selection, particularly for perennial food crops, which is a long-term investment. And I think I'll stop there. These are just some of our collaborator groups. So I'll stop at that. Thank you.